This Four Bars Rest podcast is brought to you in association with Norman's Musical Instruments, recorded by Gareth Ritter of Dolce Recordings.
Rest are in the bar of the Jury's Hotel just opposite Symphony Hall, a couple of hours after the 158th British Open Championships was decided, and a bit of surprise or possibly a shock result with Tredegar, the Grand Shield champions, one of the four bands of 2010, taking the title. I'll open the question out. We are joined by Kenny Crookson, editor of British Bandman, Stephen Mead, of course well known to everybody in the banding world, and Jeremy Wise, conductor of Redbridge and one of the most experienced conductors on the banding circuit in the UK at the present time. Gentlemen, was it a shock or a surprise? Kenny?
I'll open the button, Ewan. I'll go for surprise. I think it'd be fair to say that Body of the Hall really were enraptured by the Tredegar performance today. There were probably a number of corners that may be open to criticism. If you do, personally, I thought the last minute was maybe just slightly faster than it could have been for perfect clarity. But what a nice playing, especially in the slow movement. Really, really classy, stylish playing, especially the flugelhorn and trombone solos. So the building blocks were there for a good result for Tredegar. Did the majority of people in the hall have them winning it? I would be surprised.
Well, that's two of the gentlemen who listened to 17 bands. And Steve, for yourself, you were there doing the adjudication, of course, but in a general terms, a shock or a surprise as well?
I'll put my neck out and say it was a shock result. In terms of a first place, I thought it was a very good performance. And let me say in the same sentence, if I'm still in the same sentence, I'm absolutely thrilled for Tredegar. And I think it's great for Ian Porthouse, who is turning out to be an absolute genius conductor in getting the best out of players. I had them in seventh place, could have been sixth place, but I didn't see it as a winning performance. That said, there are a lot of very positive attributes about it. But I definitely say it was a shock. But I say I'm thrilled for them. It's fantastic for them.
If I could just add to what Steve just said there, I think in terms of a result for banding, I think it's absolutely tremendous.
Yeah.
You know, Tredegar are a band who, you know, 10 years ago they were riding quite high. You know, they've suffered a lot of players have been lost here, there and everywhere. But they've rebuilt the band. They've built the band solid to the bottom up. Cracking conductor, really. There's some really good players in the band. Some cracking young solos. I think for the band, and it's a really encouraging result that should have every band in the country saying that could be us.
Well, saying that then, Jeremy, could it be you? Redbridge are a band like Tredegar in many ways, made up of players who come from, you know, they're not all there, you know, brass players and brass thousands, etc. there. So, again, but was it a shock for you because you listened to all 17 bands there? And does it give hope, you know, for people like yourself who are conducting bands such as Redbridge?
Certainly. I mean, we came fourth behind Tredegar at the Grand Shield, so we're in touch with the Open Champions, which is always good, you know, to be thinking about your own bands. In terms of a shock, somewhere between a shock and a surprise, if you like.
A surprise.
I thought if you offered Tredegar to do their first 60 bars again, they probably would have said yes. Mm. But after that, there was some absolutely magnificent playing. A few silly mistakes in the opening bars, a bit of looseness, a few splits, but after that, magnificent playing.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think you would agree, we're in much agreement with Stephen, Kenny and myself. The usual suspects were there today, the Black Dykes, the Fairies, the Phones, etc. So, you know, is it a question, you know, that you've got a band like Tredegar who have improved and have joined that level of banding, or is it just perhaps that they've joined that level of banding just for this contest? You know, have they got to show themselves to be a much more consistent band, especially when it comes to London?
Well, I think the future will give us the answer to that. If they can retain a real high level of consistency for the next 2 years at major contests, then they definitely are in. They join the big five or six, if you like.
I think when it comes to London, I would be really hopeful. There's a Tredegar supporter. If there are any in the room here,
there may be. They may be the odd one. Yeah, I don't know.
But the band, the bands that have traditionally done well in London tend to have the big sounds, the big robust sounds.
They make a big noise, a really big noise.
You guys can mix it with the best of them down there in terms of sound, I think, volume. And that's all. Being able to project what they're doing on the stage into the adjudicator's box, it's always been one of the biggest challenges for bands, I think, in Albert Hall.
Yeah. What about impressive performances? I've got a lot of people, of course, most people had Fairy, Dyke and Foden. So the traditionally, you know, big three in the contest there. What were the ones who impressed you, Jeremy, out of those three?
I have to say I really, really enjoyed Foden's performance. Mm-hmm.
Great to see Snell back.
It's fantastic to see Howard back. Yes. He's one of my heroes, and I just love some of the moments he created. He was slightly let down a few times with silly mistakes, splits, unnecessary things really that probably never happened in the rehearsal room. Just spoilt it, that fraction, but there were some magical moments. Certainly the end of the second movement was just glorious.
Yeah, to see Howard in action again.
Fantastic.
After not seeing him do it for so many years, and like you, Jeremy, Howard is an absolute icon for me. He was probably the singular most important person in my formative years to Desford, and so, I mean, he was helpful not only in terms of him being a great conductor, but he understands human beings very well, and you could feel that communication with the band, and to watch him with his hand gestures getting the best out of the band. I agree, but for five or six really stupid little errors, they'd have been right up there.
Every band had a handful of mistakes in the performance.
Nobody did a clean performance.
And personally, I thought there may have been four or five bands that could have won. No, it was a fairly close affair in the end. But I'm with you, Jerry. The last few bars of the slow movement for Foden's, it was the one moment of the day you felt the tingle going through your spine.
Yeah. So what about, you know, Fairies? You're talking about Tredegar, like the form band of 2010. Fairies too.
Yeah.
Now they came second. Russell Gray, sometimes a piece really suits him when he's got like a lyrical type of thing. It suits him again. But he's got a good band under him now with Fairies, hasn't he?
They're really reinvented. They were consistently good quality right the way through, which is, for me, the theme of the day for the bands that didn't succeed, and even some of the ones that did, was just inconsistency. Fantastic moments, fantastic sections, followed by something stupid, something silly, and then something great again. And just there's this constant little dip down through many performances. You think, oh, crikey, it spoilt it. And then you're back on track again. But I think Fairies really maintained the level all the way through the performance.
Yeah,
they were a touch of magic. I mean, sometimes he brings something about a performance.
They were the surprise band for me. I mean, I've heard, you know, Fairies on the up for a while, but this was so consistent throughout. And I do think Russell's developing as a musician all the time. And like a lot of great conductors, he doesn't do an awful lot to get the results now. There's an assuredness about the way he works, and clearly a rapport and a trust between him and the musician. So I was really impressed with what they did, and particularly the consistency of the delivery. For me, it was possibly the cleanest performance of the day.
We've heard them at the English Nationals. Yes, they were really impressive.
I mean, you and I have had a few disagreements over the years about Fairies. I mean, you've always been very kind of encouraging with Fairies since I had that crash about 6-7 years ago on the list of little players. And you were kind of always kind of this either rebuilding or rebuilding. But to me, they never really impressed much during that period. They got one or two half decent results, but they were always a band that I felt were not really in the top bracket. However, the light went on at Preston this year in Eden.
Well, I heard them last year at Whit Friday, because we followed them on somewhere, and I thought, wow, they're starting to really play. And since then, it's really taken off.
Well, obviously, the chickens came home to roost at Preston, but they proved again today that's a band that's really back in the top bracket.
Absolutely.
But talking about that, those two bands are then, and the one heavyweight band that everybody talks about when you can do any contest is Black Dyke. Again, third place, they haven't had, whether or not it's luck or whatever, but they're not winning contests at the moment. You know, they produce fantastic playing, but there's something, is there possibly something missing about their performance? It doesn't catch the ear in the box.
Ewan, where did you have them placed?
I had them as the winners.
Yeah.
So did I.
And so did I. So, and
how much do we know, eh?
I would have had them in one of the three bands that could have won it. I wouldn't have committed to myself to any of them, but one of the three bands that could have won it.
For me, Corey's held their lead right throughout the day until Dyke played, and for me there was just a little bit more variety of tone and nuance real solidity, and when they turned on their absolute best sound, to be honest, they left everybody dead. So I had them winning it by a couple of points.
It was,
I'm slightly mystified how they got third.
They had a fantastic performance at English Heritage at Bradford this year, which to me would have won any band contest. Yeah. It's one of the best Black Dyke contest performances I've heard in many a year. And by every report of the European Championships this year, I never heard many bands personally because there was twiddling knobs and patrician buttons, but everybody in Linz thought Black Dyke had won. Yeah. And they got 2 fourth places, and now today they've got a third. Mm. You know, so maybe just the contest and gods are shining on somebody else.
I don't know if I'm being churlish, because I had them winning today, but whenever I hear them, I always just wish sometimes they would play a bit quieter.
There's always
this weight, even at the quiet dynamics, and the basses sit around the mezzo piano mark. I wish that they would just take the dynamics to the floor sometimes and then create some magic, because I've heard them do it and it's fantastic. Just think sometimes they just sit on the lower dynamics a bit.
It was strange today, but when they opened the play-in, when we were sitting, I thought the bass trombone player took something down the octave, but they had a huge bass sound. It had an edge to it as well, but it wasn't an edge from a bass player pumping out too much. It was an edge of a different colour. I thought it may have been that.
We'll
go on to camouflage and a substitute and a play a little bit later on.
But of all the great bands around, traditionally the Black Dyke sound is built on the bass section. And so for me, I hear the middle and top end of the band really playing very quietly. But perhaps Jeremy has a point. Sometimes the bottom of the pyramid is a little too fat. But I'm at a loss. I think we need to look at the judges' comments and see what elements they picked up on that caused them to lose the points. Because I'm not really sure at this point.
Well, the defending champions, Corey. Some bands don't get much luck when they come to trying to create a bit of history. A couple of years ago, Grime thought we'd go for the hat trick in London. Of course, they were drawn number one and ended in.
Dyke got one as well, didn't they, a few years ago?
I think we found out, we're looking back to the record books, it's 1954 was the last time a band off number one won.
Man of Feltons.
So, you know, it would have been history for doing it as well. They put a marker down, which held its own, as you said, all the way, just about through the contest. But was there something about their performance today? We've heard the piece before when it was, because it's written for them. Was it a different performance than the one that they played a couple of years ago in Linz? Ostend?
Ostend, yeah. I mean, the thing about the Ostend performance, you know, that was the first time we'd heard the piece. And anything that's new in a band contest can sometimes have the ability to deceive. I'm not taking anything away from Corey's own performance, because the band played brilliantly that day. I think what we heard today was the same again. A Rolls-Royce performance from one of the tightest bands I think any of us have ever heard. I mean, they're a band that just play flawlessly almost all the time. But again, the pieces had time to mature in people's minds over the last year and a half or so, and the other conductors have had a chance to come in and do. And we heard different things being done with the music today from what we heard in Ostend and from Corey.
Uncharacteristic slips too today.
One or two, but
uncomfortable moment in the middle, trombone had a couple
really
over, very unusual. They normally go from beginning to end and you think, well, it's flawless. Not quite today.
I thought the technique of the band and the layering of the dynamics, looking at the score, it's really quite incredible what Bob is able to achieve sometimes. The amount of detail.
The clarity is just definition, it's absolutely there.
But maybe that doesn't speak to people who it was a number one performance, so it was always up against it.
Can you imagine how we might be sitting talking though if Corey had drawn number 15?
Yeah,
what might have been different?
Yeah, true.
I think the point you made with the second movement, there were so many different interpretations when it came to the second, especially the little jazz interlude.
Yeah.
Miles Davis and Tommy. I don't know if Miles Davis and Tommy Dorsey ever met up anywhere, but I doubt whether or not they would have both played the way, you know, I'm going to play in this style and then somebody else is totally different.
There was a huge variety of approaches.
Very few flugel and trombone players really kind of seemed to have met each other before they went on the stage, you know.
It was the flugel played in one style, and then I know that, as you say, Miles Davis played in one style, Tommy Dorsey played in a different. It's something like chalk and cheese, isn't it?
But
really,
the thing is, Ewan, we know that the most brass band players don't live in this style at all, and when they do, it's an imitatory style of you know, listen to this and copy the style of this. It's not natural. A few trombone players sounded incredibly comfortable with it, but only a few flugel players. Some just decided to add gratuitous kind of slidings between notes to say, look, I'm being jazzy. And sometimes that almost worked, and sometimes it really didn't at all. And some just played it straight with a nice sound. So this stylistic exploration is something. It's hard for the judges when they start adding extra stuff as well. There's a whole minefield out there. Like, you know, that's not written.
I think Tredegar racked up the points in that moment. Flugel and trombone were absolutely outstanding. Flugel, beautiful sound, lovely quality through the range, effortless slurs, purity. Trombone, exactly the same.
Just mentioning the young trombone player, which Tredegar, I think, as well. I mean, he won the solo prize today.
Steve Sykes, the young Steve Sykes.
I'm sure we could all have our own ideas about who might have won it, but unarguably, he was outstanding today.
Yeah, he's a classic. Yeah. As a conductor, Jeremy, if you when you faced with a score like that, what do you tell players? Have they got to, do you ask the players to go and do their homework? You know, go and listen to Miles Davis, go and listen to Tommy Dorsey. Some of them seem to have a strange idea of what those players played like.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying. I think it depends on who you've got sat alongside you. I mean, at Redbridge, the guy on Flugel in particular, it would have suited him absolutely down to the ground because it's just his cup of tea. Mm-hmm. He would have done everything just instinctively how it needed to be done. And I'd like to have heard Jane play it on trombone too, because she's right in her element up there, and you know, she might have stuck in the odd sneaky lip trill here and there.
But you just need to win the Grand Shield, Jerry. Hmm? You just need to win the Grand Shield.
Well, yeah, keep trying.
If he gets Whitburn, though, that's a thing for next year there. Now, the band that came finally in sixth place, Rothwell. And Rothwell have been a bit of a dark horse in major competition for a long time, but now they're a very consistent band. But it seems to be based on like traditional brass band values with them, isn't it? Everything seems in its place.
Yep.
And today, you know, they seem to take the edge off because they had a big sounding band as well. I was impressed with them. It was just the second movement, I think, for them lost them the opportunity to come a bit higher.
I've always been, I agree absolutely with what you say there. In the last couple of years, Rothwell have impressed me more than ever before. The one last year in Bradford, it was a tremendous performance, but the one that really got me was in Albert Hall last year. When, you know, there were people saying that they could have been even higher than the fourth place that they got. I think you're right, today they just took the edge off.
Yeah.
You know, that small edge of something sort of their sound.
Yeah,
and I think it may have been an attempt to deal with the different acoustic that Symphony Hall offers compared to places like Albert Hall and St George's Hall.
I suppose there's very little wrong with today. For me, it was a bit bland, but the playing was there, playing was good.
In that mind, if you talk about it a little bit bland, sometimes being bland is a good way of getting into the
prizes. It's fourth, fifth, sixth place.
It's a good way to get into prizes.
There's not much wrong with the playing at all.
I found the direction absolutely solid, very clear. It's clearly a band that like playing together. There was a lot of feeling of teamwork, which is what Rothwell is. So I had my placings was very similar to where they got. It wasn't stunning and outstanding, but it was quite hard to fault, actually, for most of it. I thought they did very well.
I think I agree with Kenny. I think they could be a band to watch out for in London. They are in London, are they, open? I think they are.
They qualified from last year, so
They're a band. I think the Albert Hall would suit them as well. Yeah. Going back down further down the list, who were the performances, you know, from the like 7 to 10, whatever, the type of bands that stand out? For me, one performance, some people didn't like it. I enjoyed Desford. I enjoyed the middle movement that they did with Desford. For other people, it didn't just touch the buttons.
Great to see Martin in front of his old band.
Very much like Howard Snell.
Lots of the gestures. And I thought he had a real sense of line and forward motion. And some great playing. I thought it tailed off. I thought towards the end of the second movement, all of a sudden the dominoes started falling, which was a real shame because they were very impressive until that moment. But for me, there's always that element that things are always held together with Elastoplast because they do get everything at the last minute. But it was a good performance.
I felt it was a bit light today at times, just not quite enough weight.
But you can tell there's a lot of good players in that band, can't you?
Yeah, some very quality solo playing, actually. Yeah. The first two-thirds of the second movement was sublime as the soloists came into their own. And say, they just ran into some accidents later on.
There was two bands that came just slightly lower than Desford. I did enjoy Desford, like Steve. But I thought both Grainthorpe and Brickhouse... The intention of both of them was great.
Yes, there was.
You know, got 5 out of 10 for delivery in places, you know, they just didn't quite have the consistency.
I always get the feeling with Grainthorpe, there's a nearly a performance that wipes the floor with everybody.
If they had remained blemish-free today, arguably that could have been the winner. But
their sounds change for me. Mm-hmm. The top ends become a bit fierce for my taste.
Well, I viewed them on a recording recently as well, and they're a bright sounding band. They're a powerful band, but they're a bright sounding band at the moment.
It's too strident for my ears.
We know that the band always seems to shine in the Albert Hall, and they don't seem to change the sound picture they deliver in a contest from Symphony Hall.
Of course, to the shining Albert Hall, you have to actually qualify for it first in the recent couple of years.
Yeah, they've failed at that.
It's exactly that inconsistency that's cost them, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. But there was definitely a fragility in some of the solo playing that, you know, considering how often this band play together and the great concerts they do, it's like, well, where did that come from, you know? A little bit surprising.
The Maverick performance, I think, as always, people love to see him come back. David King, Brighouse and Rastro. Jimmy, you know Brighouse and Rastro well, as a band as well.
Yeah.
Again, they're another band. On their day, they can wipe the floor with anyone. Today, the crowd enjoyed it. Of course, they enjoyed the spectacle of seeing David King in front of them. But there's something about them. There's something missing, I think, about them at the moment. They don't seem to be the finished article.
No, I totally agree. It's one of the most difficult bands today for me to judge, for me to score, because it's such an engaging watch. And the benefit for Brighouse, or for me watching or listening to Brighouse, would be to be in a box and be detached from that. I get so drawn into what he's doing that I find that a distraction. Mm-hmm. And I really did enjoy it. It was the most extreme middle movement, but I loved it for that. I may not have done the same, but I did really enjoy it.
But it doesn't matter whether you're watching or whether you're in a box. When you hear split notes and poor intonation at the end of that second movement in the corners, it was really...
The end of the second movement really spoiled it.
It was a really disappointing aspect of a really good performance.
That unison section, the end of the second movement, was a major shame, because there'd been so much class just before it.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And what about the bands that are the bands the bottom end towards it? We've got the likes of Cooperative Funeral Care, who came 11th, all the way down, unfortunately, down to the two Scottish bands. Kenny, sorry about this. It looks like at least one
of
them.
Yes,
it is. It's the Alice Tartan Army there. We're all on our way to Blackpool. that's what that's going to be there. What about the certain bands that you hear them play sometimes and they just automatically think 12th, 13th, 14th place? Is this something about them that they just haven't got that extra sparkle? They don't want to take the extra risk.
I think it's a lack of consistency, because all the bands that were placed after, let's say, 10th, actually, some of them played absolutely stunning for about 4 or 5 minutes, and you thought, "Hello, I'm not expecting this." And then one by one, the errors come. You know, a couple of solos really went down quite badly, crashed and burned, and then some shocking intonation comes out of almost thin air, almost unexpectedly. So I think it's the lack of consistency, which for some of them is a lack of confidence. And it was a shame, because, I mean, for example, I thought GOS Virtuosi played really well at times. There were some great things, and then there was a lot of slips that really took the gloss off it.
Jeremy, you picked up when we were talking earlier about two players that really made an impression on you, two young players. First was James Fountain at GUS. It really is a star player.
Oh, it's super.
But the other one, as you say, was the flugelhorn player with Tom Gwynlai's band.
Yeah, I love it.
It's strange that sometimes you've got a player comes out, not a great performance, but stands out so much.
It was
some lovely surprises.
Super silky sound and style and just right for me. One of the things that, talking about the bottom 3, 4, 5 bands here, one of the things that I made a mental note of when I was marking and looking at the list now is, for me, they were hampered by two elements of their performance. One was an attempt at times to strip the paint from the walls.
Mm-hmm.
I think consistently in those bottom bands they really overblew. And the second thing was that the balance between the band and the percussion was lost on a number of occasions, with the percussion becoming absolutely deafening at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a mental note with those two or three bands.
That last remark about percussion, I think you could actually extend that to some of the bands higher up in the
band. Oh, absolutely.
Well,
times, but more consistently for me with those.
Yeah.
There were times when I just thought, for goodness sake, stop belting the thing, you can't hear the band.
Especially the bass drum.
I
think sometimes with the percussion players, they don't get the opportunity, I don't think a lot of them get the experience of playing the instruments in Symphony Hall.
Yeah.
And unlike the Albert Hall, where you can hit anything and it'll still, you know, it takes you half a day for it to come back. Symphony Hall is such, like, almost perfect acoustic.
Yeah.
especially are you saying bass drum player, I felt as well it was the vibe players. A lot of the time we didn't hear the vibe player in the second one. Yeah. Xylophone players are brilliant today. There's so many good xylophone players.
Astonishing, absolutely astonishing. But I mean, you've got people there hitting a 42-inch bass drum with a pair of chair legs and wondering why you can't hear the band.
And they see fortissimo, and they think it's an absolute dynamic.
Yeah.
You know,
I noticed Dyke brought their own little bass drum on. To take the sound right down and to give it, yeah, because those big drums, when you hit them so hard, they're so baggy and boomy.
Yeah.
So out of those bands at the bottom, what do you think? Unfortunately, I say for you, Kenny, you know, you've got Whitburn are going to go to the Grand Shield for next year, but you know, they weren't that far away from the pace. Really, it wasn't the question of being, you know, down and out and, you know, dead certs of the drop.
Looking at the bands at the very bottom, I mean, Kirsten Pillar for one, right? You know, they had an unfortunate series of mistakes, especially in slow movement. But there was some really, really top notch band playing, especially in outer movements. You know, they were okay. You might be able to say they've only got themselves to blame for finishing where they did. But personally, I think they're probably just slightly unfortunate, especially after having a decent result last year. Yeah. And the indications are that it's Whitburn and Kirkie that are going to Blackpool. Unlucky for them, you know. For Whitburn. Well, I've had 15 or 16 years at the British Open. I've had one or two highlights during that.
They came second once, didn't they?
Second in Planets about 7 or 8 years ago.
And sixth about
but 6 or 3 years ago.
But the Grand Shield is a hard contest
There's
a lot of...
We're working our way up.
You can play exceptionally well, but you can turn up as the full band there, get drawn number 2, whatever. It's going to be difficult.
Well, for bands at that level, they're obviously really good bands, you know, and in their own areas. I mean, Whitburn and Kirkie Co-op have obviously dominated in Scotland for a long time now. But somehow when you stick bands at that, like Tredegar, for instance, who have had 2 or 3 years trying to get out of there. Leyland a few years ago.
Oh, 5 years took Tredegar to get back
here. Another good band in Leyland who took a while to get back in here. But you'd hate to think that two bands with such quality would take another 4 or 5 years to get back to Birmingham again. But Blackpool's a funny old place, isn't it? Especially in the second weekend in May.
Yeah. Well, we seem to have digested what's happened today at the British Open. So just to cover now a couple of points, a couple of issues that were coming up. Of course, Steve, we were looking at the judging criteria experiment that we did, and Jeremy, you kindly sat in all 17 performances and did it as our 4 bars rest guinea pig, in effect, for doing that. You were findings on it. For somebody such as yourself, who was used to listening to brass bands, did you find it helpful? What did you find about it? Were you able to use it in a constructive way, as you say, then to be able to place the bands in the method that you wanted to do?
Yeah, I was. Took a little while to get used to it. And I think if the system were brought in like this and your marks were removed immediately early on, it might cause you a few grey hairs. Because I needed 2, 3, 4 bands to get into the system and to get used to the acoustic and the piece and the standard. Mm-hmm. And I needed to have that sort of levelling time. Because I think after about the 4th band, I looked at my marks and I had something like 50 or 60 points between the best band and the worst band. And I thought, oh, right, OK, we're in some trouble here. But, you know, that's the way the system works. I think it needs tweaking. I think in some cases there's probably more finesse in the system than is necessary. Mm-hmm. I also think certain elements, for example, tempi, you need to really state how you would discuss and work out tempi, because you might think the first movement was spot on, the second movement was too slow, or you might think the second movement was miles too slow, but it really sounded great and worked.
Yeah.
So you've got to give sort of opinions and sort out how that's assessed. Mm-hmm. So there's tweaks and there's discussions to be had, but I think from my point of view, where I ended up with the results, they're the same as Stephen's, they're the same as yours. Mm. First, I think 8 places are identical. So, and we were sat in completely different parts of the hall. We didn't speak during
honestly,
the day.
Are we going to say that honestly?
I could see you across the hall, but there was no hand signals going on.
Steve, and for yourself, you pioneered this, and listening to somebody like Jeremy, who's able to look at it and then digest it, because he's been able, you know, the experience he got.
Yep.
Of course, the other thing to say, of course, Jeremy knew the score.
Yes,
and that's the thing as well. And it
that's
may be
very
a bit more
important to do.
Maybe
that.
A bit more difficult for people, as you say, coming cold if they haven't listened to the piece before, to use that criteria to start off with.
But this is a system for judges to use and other people to appreciate. Yeah. We don't really expect the judges are going to come in cold with a score and say, what's this all about? I need five performances to get used to it. We don't pay judges to do that. So this is for the informed people who've done their homework to start listening from band number one and be able to really, really accurately give an analysis of the performance. Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. I mean, it was great to see a lot of people around the hall. I estimate probably 100 to 150 people trying this out, people I met before. So we're going to get the feedback from them. Like I said right up front, this is not, doesn't purport to be a perfect system, and there are always going to be things like tempo, for example, to discuss, you know. And there was, somebody asked me a question about how can you talk about sound quality and balance as separate, because if it's not balanced, then how can you talk about quality? Well, actually you can. A quality of sound is a quality of sound. You may be missing some voices or other voices may be dominant, and so there are a lot of crossover markings between some of these criteria. Mm-hmm. But we were able to have a mark spread, unfortunately, from about as low as somewhere around 120 up to close to 190. But the mark spread is there for us to fully appreciate the different attributes of a performance. And when after the performance, I found Jeremy, after the contest, I looked through, and sometimes we were two or three marks difference on each band. And when you're marking with a mark spread of 70 marks, that's really quite amazing. That, for me, is a sign that the system has merit, and I'd be delighted for 10, 15, 20 people to spend a weekend going over this and tweaking it and coming up with Mark II. I'd be absolutely delighted.
Kenny, me and you have sat in listening to literally hundreds of performances, you know, and sometimes, you know, you think yourself, off, you know, 20 bars in, you could switch off because you just know it's not going to be a good one. Would you think this will keep the interest of an adjudicator? So you know, take Tredegar's performance, for instance. You know, after the first six bars, you may have thought, oh, this is going to be a disaster because the bass drum was a bit out with the rest of the band. So do you think that it keeps the adjudicator involved all the way through?
Yeah, well, I think in terms of Tredegar's performance today, if it had been judged under Steve's system, probably wouldn't have won. Mm. I think it's probably fair to say that. But,
well, it didn't on any of ours, did it?
No, but the way the elements are arranged, you know, there were these, let's call them flaws, you can call them weaknesses, whatever you want to call them. Obviously it's produced a different result from what we'd expect from our, let's call them, traditional adjudicators. Personally, I mean, I think there's a lot of merit in this. I really do. I'm in my working life, I'm in favour of what works. You know, principles are great things, and you can have stuff that you want to stand by, but principally I'm in favour of what works. And if we can make this work for the benefit of every band contest around, great. But I agree with Steve, it needs, you know, the gears inside the machine need oiled. You know, there's one or two, you know, for every element to be scored equally, to each have 20 marks, you know, realistically that's probably not really the case.
But they are interlinked, that's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
One of the biggest advantages of this system for me, having adjudicated previously, I mean, I did the third section area a few years ago, 22 bands, is not having to constantly write, because I find it difficult to write and listen exactly the same time.
Yeah.
All you're doing really is listening to the performance, following the score, and making mental notes about where each section fits within the marking system, and then at the end you put your marks down. And that, for me, I listened to the entire performance with the score. I wasn't writing, you know, the kind of annoying oops sop kind of comments that you're used to getting.
You'd like to think this is part of evolution, isn't it? You know, it's only 10, 15 years ago you come to this contest and every band was given points. But you know what? The winners had 197, second had 196, 195, 195. Whereas one point either way, they were just there as placeholders, really. They managed to do away with that. It may be in the next 2 years that we're a bit of tweaking that, like you say, it might need a dozen people to sit in a room for a weekend listening to performances and coming up with something. Or even a structure that individual judges could apply their own weightings to might be the way to go with it.
I'd love to see 5 or 6 of our traditional adjudicators, 10 or so of our top conductors, and other people who've got an eye for systems to actually somehow come together, even if it's a telephone conference or submitting ideas by email. But we have to do something. Systemless marking is not the future.
Well, it sounds like Steve's providing the sandwiches.
Yes, you're going to be doing for that one there. Now,
I've got a big garden.
Right. Last couple of topics to cover in the last 5 minutes of the programme, gentlemen. 2010 British Open. It seemed a good crowd in the day.
Yes.
It seemed to be, you know, I think the test piece was partly responsible for that. Possibly the draw as well, with Corey being drawn number one, so there was interest right from the beginning as well. But a couple of issues which were arisen. British Open, should bands be borrowing players at this level?
No.
Ideally not.
Jeremy.
Ideally not.
Are we talking at the very, very top level of brass banding?
I'd be interested to know.
I think more than a handful. There was quite a few. I think, looking around the stands, there was a few borrow players, I think, there.
If they can't borrow...
Is it just a reflection of the way banding is at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is. But if they can't borrow and they've got the money, they'll fly somebody in. Mm. And some did.
Yeah. And I don't see it perhaps as a bigger issue, even as you do, but I think we'd have to draw the line at one.
Mm.
For the next 5 years, I don't think you can keep saying, we're two players down and change it again next year.
Is it possibly time to consider the very principle of registration in itself? Because if you think about it, it was brought in just after the war, and among the main reasons for its existence were to keep professional players out of bands, to keep military players out of bands, who are obviously professionals as well, but to stop people playing for more than one band on one day. This is a British Open, so you can only play with one band, but a lot of the local contests and smaller events, you see players playing with maybe two or three different bands on one day because of the borrowed players rules. Is it maybe time we need to look at the general principle of registration as a whole rather than just the British Open element of it?
I don't think it's really going to be resolved for a while, but I think possibly you had the working party, I think, which are meeting tomorrow here to discuss things, and I think they may have to pick up on that one to take it forward. Because there's a possibility, I think Jeremy got the right answer. If you've got the money, and if you've got,
there's been evidence of that.
And if you've got a test piece with an horrendous euphonium part, then, or an horrendous soprano part, then why not?
Borrowed players, it's almost irrelevant, because if you know the contest coming up, you can go and sign Wynton Marsalis for principal product if you want.
Yeah.
But as long as you do it in July, you don't need to borrow them, do you? No.
We know one very famous trumpet player, don't we, who was available for £10. Morris Murphy, by all accounts, available for £10, didn't you? We were told by a very famous conductor.
£10 an hour.
£10 an hour, yeah.
But we'll need them for 15 minutes.
15 minutes, you just have to pay £2.50, so that was a thing there. And finally for today, so Jeremy, are you heartened by the response? Looking at the British Open, coming here, sitting in, listening to the bands, whatever. Is it a vibrant future for the British Open, especially you in a big venue like Symphony Hall?
Yeah, I think it is. I think we've all heard some magnificent playing from many, many bands right down the order. Not consistently so, but yeah, I think it was a really good day. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Steve, yourself?
Yeah, I think it's been a fantastic day. I'd like to see even more people staying in the hall. But, having listened to 17 bands without a break...
It's hard work,
isn't it? I didn't get a chance to eat. I had to rush out once to go to the loo. I'd like to see more young people in the hall. I'd like to see youth bands come and buy blocks of tickets. I'd like to see just a slightly more energetic approach at publicising the contest. But it was a great test piece. The bands gave it their heart and soul. And despite what we think is a slightly shot result, I think we can say it's been a magnificent day.
Well, I'm going to disagree that I thought it was a fantastic result, of course. I put my hand on my heart as the president of Tredegar Band. Kenny, 2010, British Open, a good one?
Definitely, yeah. I think when we think back over the great contests we've been at over the years, and you and I mean, we meet each other maybe a dozen times a year at band contests, so there's all types in there, but just occasionally we come away saying there's been a really good contest today, and I think this was one of them. But I think the common factor when that is the case is the test piece, which today ticked every box almost, and the audience found it very appealing. Like Steve said, most of the bands got a pretty good audience. I've been a victim of a band in the past that played about number 6 at lunchtime after Black Dyke, Grimey, Fodens, Varies, YBS, and then suddenly everybody just gets cleaned out the hall when your band comes on, it was very disheartening. Nobody really had that today at all.
Well, they actually announced the lunch break properly this time.
Yeah.
There was a kind of structure. They learned some lessons from the last couple of years.
But in general, though, a really good British Open. Like last year, I thought last year was a tremendous contest, but again, really good test piece.
The one thing we haven't talked about is the penalty point system.
Ah, right, go on. Then we'll have a quick 2 minute.
I watched a lot of bands, and I watched all the bands, and I don't think there would have been a single band today that came away without a penalty point or two. Everybody changed things, added players, rewrote parts, covered parts on sop. Everybody. So you either just say do what you like, or you penalise them.
Well, when judges are in boxes and can't see, you can do what you like.
Yeah,
and that's why it goes on. An open adjudication system with the ability to not only threaten to use, but actually use, and you'd get rid of 99% of it. The only 1% would remain, but bands have got no other alternative but to do it.
Well, it'd be interesting if it had made it disqualification criteria, then most bands wouldn't have made it past bar 20. Because the opening's written for three trombones and back row cornets, and they all had all the cornets playing, they had youths and baritones covering it up, all sorts going on.
There's nothing new under the sun now, is there?
Absolutely.
And I'm sure in Harry Mortimer's day, the same things have been on.
They used to play the slot part the other way around.
I know. Well, the great Phineas Bowler, wasn't there? He was the one who was disqualified for playing the euphonium part in the valve trombone. So there's nothing new under the sun. Gentlemen, many thanks indeed. It's been an excellent discussion about the 2010 British Open. Thanks to Kenny Crookston, thanks to Stephen Mead, thanks to Jeremy Wise. Hopefully we'll be doing this again in the very near future, and I think there's plenty to discuss as well from some of the topics that we've raised. Thanks very much.
Our thanks again go to Kenny Crookston, Jeremy Wise and Stephen Mead, Gareth Ritter of Dolce Recordings, and the Fairy Band and Phil Lawrence for the Four Bars Rest theme tune.